The parsha. I'm not going to say the vort, even though it's the only vort that I hold that if you don't know, you're not Jewish if you don't get it. But I will tell you, we're going to start off with a Rami Ovid Avi. Let's start off the beginning of the parsha. The beginning of Ki Savo means when you come into the land of Eretz Yisrael, you're going to bring something called Bikurim, which are the first fruits that grow every year. Every year, you see your fruits start growing out of the ground, you take a little string, you tie it around the first fruits to grow, and you bring it to Yerushalayim, and you give it to a Kohen. The Kohen gets to eat it in Yerushalayim. Okay, while you're there, you say a vidui. The vidui is what we say in the Haggadah on Pesach. The whole concept of Yanis v'amarto arami oved avi v'yirid mitzrayim v'yogar shambim sema'at v'yisham l'goy gadol atzimbarav. If that sounds familiar to you, great. That means you actually paid attention during the Seder. If it doesn't sound familiar to you, then you're a fool. That's the idea behind the beginning of this parsha. Then we get into Ma'aser Sheni. After we get into Ma'aser Sheni, which is also something that you bring to Yerushalayim, our second tithe, after Truma, after Ma'aser Rishon comes Ma'aser Sheni, after we did all that, there's another vidui to say over there, and then afterward, we go into the Brit. The full Brit, in which we say, here is our connection to God. God is married to us, so to speak. And unfortunately, that means that if we do something wrong and we have znut on God, so to speak, then that means that we are responsible for what we do, and that brings us into the Arurin, the curses, and eventually the Tokaka, where if we do good, we get brachos. If we don't, then we have 1,001 curses from Dr. Seuss, specifically 98 curses. But that's really the end of the parsha. That's how Ki Savo goes. Now, Lavan. How do we understand Lavan? What is Lavan? What does Lavan mean to us? So we say Arami Ovid Avi. The Aramean, referring to Lavan Arami, made my father lose or tried to destroy my father. That's what we say on Pesach, that Lavan tried to destroy my father. Here's the pshat. Lavan looked innocent. He's called Lavan because it means white, and white is beautiful. That is the idea behind such a concept, that it means clean, that there's no dirtiness on it. It doesn't mean anything. There's nothing wrong with it. That's what Lavan stands for. That means what he tried to do is he tried to act like Lavan in every way possible. He wore the same clothing, I would assume Chassidisha clothing. He wore the same hat, you know, the big furry hat. He wore a gartel during davening. The assumption is that Lavan looked exactly like Yaakov Avinu, even in his beard. And if somebody would look at Lavan, he would think that that's Yaakov Avinu. He would see no difference between one and the other. And Yaakov Avinu himself had to daven constantly. Day in, day out, he had to daven that people should see the difference between him and Lavan on the outside, so they wouldn't be confronted with a massive Chilul Hashem at the end of the day. Because sometimes a Yaakov Avinu looks bad when you look at a Lavan who seems so cultured and so good and so whatever it is, where on the outside he seems to be a great guy, but on the inside, deep down in the inside, he's a piece of garbage. He may look the part, but he doesn't act the part. While Yaakov Avinu acts the part, but sometimes when you act the part, you have to be harsh on other people, so your outside sometimes portrays somebody that is not doing the right thing, when really he's doing the right thing the whole time. That is a difficult concept to imagine, especially in the world that we're living in today, but that's why Yaakov Avinu has to constantly daven. The Me'ah Shiloh says that's what it means by Arami Ovid Avi. The Arami, Lavan Arami, would go around and show everybody what a Jew should be like, what a real Talmid of Avraham Avinu should be like. Here's what the people should be like. Here's how you should act. And that's what he do, portraying himself as the Iker of the Talmidim of Avraham Avinu, even though he never met Avraham. He did quite know Avraham's brother, which was his grandfather, Nahor, and he took the teachings and turned it the opposite. He looked innocent, but he really was nothing. He tried to make my father be lost by everybody saying that Yaakov Avinu is a nobody, Lavan is the person to go to, and in truth, he wasn't anything like that, says the Gro. We may not notice it, but God does miracles for us every day. It's the simple, you're going down the street and the guy you see, I'll give you an example from this past week. I was in Lake Geneva this past week for 3 days. I had a wedding on Sunday night, so I brought my whole family up there on Sunday, and on Sunday night I came back to go to the wedding, and then after the wedding was over I went back up to Lake Geneva. On the way back there, I don't know if anybody heard about it, but on the Edens there was a 6-lane crash in which 3 lanes going north and 3 lanes going south, all 6 lanes were totally knocked off. The north lane could not go anywhere. The lanes going south could only go on the side of the road to get by. It was that messed up. So we were there. I don't know, we just were right up there as it started to pack up. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this doesn't look like a normal, especially at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, it doesn't look like a normal thing. So I'm like, should I get off? Should I get off? So I said to my wife, should I get off? She's like, I don't know, maybe you should just stay on. And I'm like, nope, that means get off. So I immediately, that's never what you should say to your wife. Instead, you should say, honey, whatever you say, that's what I'll do. But this time, I used my gut instinct, which all guys have, and it's really, really good. And I got off the highway, and we went down, instead of taking the highway, I went down Skokie Boulevard until we got to, not even Lake, until Skokie Boulevard turns into the Edens itself. Okay? Now, if anybody doesn't know Chicago, I'm sorry, but I ended up getting on the Edens itself. The Edens was empty. There was not a single car on it because there was no way to get past. There was a massive, we turned on the radio in 780, news radio 780, immediately goes on and says, yes, there's a six car lane buildup, whatever it is, right in front of Lake, right past Old Orchard. So had I been 5 minutes, well, I shouldn't say 5 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes earlier, had I gone 85 miles an hour instead of 65 miles an hour on the highway, then I would have been too far to get off at Old Orchard, which means I would have stayed there for however long it was going to take to clean up the road. But because I didn't go 85 miles an hour, or because I left that 2 minutes later, it was literally 2 minutes of a difference that caused the massive buildup so that I didn't get involved and I was able to get off and get out at Old Orchard. That is a miracle. You may not picture that as a miracle. You just think like, well, that's Seichel of three. I understand that because I do have tremendous Seichel and I have the ability to get off the highway when I think that there's something up ahead. Some might even call it spider sense or Ruach HaKodesh. That could be. That could well be. But at the end of the day, I was able to get off at the right time, and that is a nace. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it for me, and he does it every single time. The fact that we survived Lavan during the 20 years, it may not have seemed like such a problem. Listen, Yaakov was going up against Lavan, and there were things going on every single time, or whatever, and stuff like that. The Pasuk tells us it was a huge miracle that Aram Yovidavi, every single day, Lavan stood there with, I don't know, with a shotgun, waiting for Yaakov Avinu to pass by, and every single time he took the shotgun, he shot it, and it missed. Every single day. And every single day, Yaakov Avinu just walked by without knowing anything, without realizing that a bullet just whizzed past his head. He just kept thinking it was raining outside. He had no idea that every single day, Lavan was trying to do something to destroy him. And every single day, he was saved. Says the Gra, that's what the Pasuk is teaching us. That at the end of the day, for 20 years, Arami Obed Avi, and yet, Yaakov Avinu came out. Not only did he come out unscathed, he came out with everything. Think of what he came out with. He came out with all the best things that you can imagine in the world. Four wives. Not one. Not two. Not three, but four wives. Their names stand for Barzel, Bilhah, Rachel, Zilpah, Leah, all together, the greatest of the great. There was nothing bad that could come from this. It was only good. That happens to us all the time. Maybe not the four wives thing, but it happens to us all the time, where good things happen to us, and all we have to do is realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind it, and we'll know what ends up being. Says the Chafetz Chaim. Why would they have gone down to Mitzrayim for Golus? Wouldn't it have just been easier to stay by Lavan? If you had to be in Golus, wouldn't it be easier to be by your relative, Lavan, than it is to be down by Mitzrayim? The answer is, you ever been by your relatives for anything? Relatives are not easy to be around all the time, and especially for 400 years of Golus. It teaches us a massive lesson. Relatives are harsher than others. If you have a teacher, you're in college, right? And the teacher is not Jewish, and you explain that we have holidays, this coming up Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the next, well, not the next one, but then after that, another Thursday, Friday, and then the next Thursday, Friday. You try explaining that to a non-Jew, totally understood. Oh, I completely understand. It's unbelievable. Everything's all good. But if the person is Jewish, you have no chance. No chance. What do you mean? No. Don't take off. Because it's harsher. I don't know if it's the guilt complex or something like that or whatever it is, but they will not, they never, never give you the time of day, unless of course it's okay, somebody's Orthodox, then it's a different story. You can do that for me, but it's not going to work in other places where you're trying to get it around. That's the way it is. Says the Chafetz Chaim after he said this idea of why we couldn't go down to Lavan, because sometimes relatives are harsher. He lifted up his hands to Shaim and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did you place us in Russia for our goals? Russia, I mean, aside from the word in English meaning Russia in Hebrew, but aside from that, the leaders at the time where the Chafetz Chaim was at the end of his life with the Bolshevik Revolution were all Jewish. They were all Jews. The beginning of the communist regime was all Jewish. Says the Chafetz Chaim, why do you bring us here? This is the harshest ghost we could have had. You should have put us by a place where we would have been under non-Jews instead of by that. Why would it be? Now, in the end, as a side note, it was a bracha. Because we all know, had they been in Western Europe, or in parts of Eastern Europe that wasn't Russia, they all would have been killed by the Holocaust. The 3 million Jews that were in Russia would have all been destroyed completely. Then there comes Akasha. In Russia, they were spiritually destroyed. Spiritually destroyed to the point where they had absolutely nothing. So which one was worse? Obviously, that's not a question that we can answer. 6 million people that died versus 3 million people that spiritually were lost. We don't look at that. We don't know. I know, but you can't define that by us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell us in the end of the day.
If somebody has to say that, they'll be like, what are you talking about?
I understand completely. You never tell that to a Holocaust survivor. You know what I'm saying? We don't say that to somebody like that. But the Chafetz Chaim, but at least it shows us something. At least the Chafetz Chaim's lesson is something like that. It tells us how we should be away. That's the idea behind it. Now,
you're saying what was worse, the Holocaust or different?
I'm not saying which is worse. I'm just saying that the Chafetz Chaim was saying, how could you have put us by Jews? I'm saying at least you weren't destroyed in the Holocaust like all the people who weren't by Jews.
Even though you took out religion, you still had a chance.
That's the guy. That's the Kajan. That's where you're looking at. That's just a thought-provoking question to be able to give you guys. Was it worse that the 3 million in Russia where they lost everything spiritually but they lived, or the 6 million in Russia where they had spirituality but they were all decimated? That's the Kajan.
The ones that were killed also got a spiritual afterlife, like
Kashas, if you wonder, it's in Russia. I don't know. These are questions that are way beyond us. So let's not go into it. You never want to talk to somebody who went through Russia or somebody who went through the Holocaust and be like, no, I think they were. that's not your deal.
The reality is, these people lost their
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it's been all bad for a long time.
Yeah, for all of them. That's obvious. All right, I've got a good line. Everybody has learned this Gemara. Everybody's heard this Gemara. But I don't think anybody's fully understood this Gemara. Okay? You've learned it. It's a Gemara in Brachos, Samach Gimel Amud Beis. It says, Cherev al Sfeneim Shel Yisrael. There's a sword that belongs for the enemies of the Jews. Shiyoshvin bad bebad beoskin betorah. That sits by themselves and they learn Torah. Now why? The Gemara says because you become foolish. You become foolish. You're sitting by yourself. You can't bounce your ideas off somebody else. So you're going to come up with a foolish idea and you're going to come up with it. You're going to be like, oh, that's brilliant. When if you had a chavrusa, your chavrusa would look at you and be like, what are you, an idiot? That's the silliest thing I've ever heard. Right? That's what your chavrusa is there for, to tell you what kind of an idiot you are. But if you're by yourself, you don't know that. It makes you dumb. Because you're not even trying anymore. Eventually, you're just, that's a chedish. And you don't even know what you're doing. So sitting by yourself and learning is cheret. You're called a sonein shel Yisrael. You're a sone. You're a despised one of the Talmidei Chachamim, and you deserve the sword for what you've had up until now. That's amazing. For what? That's an amazing thing. So should I not learn whatsoever? Listen, guys, at night, I have my own night seder. When I get home from night seder in the yeshiva, I have my own night seder where I'm learning by myself. Am I really hated by the Talmidei Chachamim? When are you allowed to learn by yourself? When are you not allowed to learn by yourself? The Gemara doesn't go through it. The question is, when can you do is you always have to have a chavrusa? If you're not going to learn because your chavrusa is not there, should you not learn? Should you just say like, oh, chavrusa's not here, I can just go now? But obviously not. So what's the pshat? Says the Gra. Another question. It says the Yoshvin bad bibad. Now, I'm not a Hebrew grammarian. I know I look like one, but I'm not. Yoshvin bad bad is the correct term. It should be they're sitting by themselves. Bad bibad seems like they're saying they're sitting by themselves. What does that mean exactly? What's the base connecting those two words for? What does that mean exactly? Says the Gra. The truth is that there's a mile and a chisaron of learning with the chavrusa and learning by yourself. What's the mile of learning with the chavrusa? You learn with the chavrusa, you can bounce ideas off each other and you can make it work. But the chisaron is that you have an easy chance to do batala. If you're sitting sitting with another guy, and the other guy wants the bottle, or you want a bottle, you have another guy to talk to. Talking to yourself is just weird. So you're not going to do that, right? If you're by yourself, you're not going to bottle, but you don't have a guy to bounce off your ideas with. So I'll tell you an idea. So it's better to learn with the Chavrusa because of that, but you can still learn by yourself. There's still a Milo there. You're not going to bottle. But it will tell you one thing. What's worse is sitting here with another guy sitting right there, and you're both doing your own thing. I'm doing one thing, he's doing another thing, but we're sitting right next to each other. That way, you get to bottle, and you're not bouncing your ideas off each other. You get both chasronos. Here's the idea, says the Gemara. The worst thing in the world to do is to sit bad bibad, alone, but next to somebody who is also alone, so that you're both not learning with each other, but you're able to bottle with one another. That's the worst thing to be able to do. So when the pasuk goes down, and we're talking over here in Parsha Kitavo, there are many different issues in which we talk about how a person is supposed to learn. Samach tov, the Medrash says that one should be happy with all the good that's referring to Torah. How to learn, says the Gemara. One thing you must remember is how to learn. Do not be in a situation where you're by yourself next to someone who is by himself. And that's the reason why that's the worst thing in the world. That makes it, number one, you become a fool because you don't know how to learn because you're not learning with anybody else. And you become stupid because you're going to bottle and you're not going to learn anything whatsoever. That's the idea behind it. Now, I'm going to do something a little bit unique here. And again, I'm going to need a little bit of help from you. Because unfortunately, the Sefer did not fully explain themselves. If you look toward the beginning of the Parsha, it's a weird bunch of others. You're cursed. Rashi says there are 11. In fact, there are 12. Lots of kashas on Rashi. Why Rashi only mentions 11 and not 12? Okay? Each one of the orders was done in the following way. B'nai Yisrael, when they went into Eretz Yisrael, this did not happen by Moshe Rabbeinu, it happened by Yoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu was just telling them what to do. When they go into Eretz Yisrael and they sit down, they're going to go and find two mountains, Har Gerizim and Har Evil. Okay? Six Shvatim are going to go on top of Har Gerizim. Six Shvatim are going to go on top of Har Evil. And the Levium are going to be standing in the middle, in between the mountains. And all the Levium are going to call out to Har Gerizim, they're going to call out brachos. Baruch to anybody who doesn't make any idols. And everyone answers, Amen. Then they turn to Har Evil and they say, cursed is a person who makes idols. And everybody answers, Amen. So Har Gerizim at 6, Har Evil at 6. The way to remember which one is good and which one is bad, so easy. Gerizim is Gi, the Gimel, for good, and Evil is evil. Isn't that easy? Really easy. The problem is that Har Gerizim also became the Avodah Zarah mountain of the Sumerians later on. But regardless, what's going on, Yaakov? Yeah. Ephraim and Manasseh are separated. And the way that they're up, the way that the numbers that we put up there, it goes Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, Binyamin. It does say Yosef, I know. But Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin are in Har Gerizim. And then Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zvulun, Dan, and Naphtali. Yeah, there were some Levium that were on the bottom of the Canaan, and there were some of Levi that were up on top. But Dan and Naphtali, those were the six that were on Har Ebal. Now, that's what they did, and they did this. When Yoshua came in, it's in Parak Dalet, I think, in Yoshua, might be Parak Gimel, I don't remember. They did this, they went up on the mountains, they said all the curses that was there. Each one of the curses represents a Sheva. And now the question is how? Says the Me'ash Shiloh, it's a reference to a Midah that we're supposed to learn from every Sheva. It's something that we can take on for themselves, and each one is a reference to something like this. So here we go. The first is an admonishment to Levi, Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi is going to be the ones that are going to teach Torah to Klal Yisrael. They have to allow the Torah to be at least, let's say, accessible and understood by the nation, that if anybody wants to hear it, they can come to Shevet Levi, and anyone, no matter how dumb or how smart they are, there has to be someone who can teach them the Torah for them. And if they don't, then the Torah, unfortunately, can be learned in the wrong way, which can cause huge problems in Klal Yisrael. That's the idea behind it. If the Torah is misunderstood, that could be a pesel umasecha. So the first curse, cursed is the person who makes an idol, is a reference to Levi teaching them correctly. An example, Moshe Rabbeinu taught Bnei Yisrael, if anybody is poor and you can't make any money, go do an avodah shezara lo. do something, some type of work that is strange to you, that you don't know, that you're not involved with. They heard that. And they thought he said that if you're very poor, go do avodah zarah. And you can make money working for avodah zarah. Even though he said, no, avodah shez zarah lo, but the wording messed them over. And they thought that he was saying that you're allowed to do avodah zarah. And not only the people, his own grandson, Yonasan, Ben Gershom, Ben Menashe, messed up. And he himself thought that that meant that you could go ahead and do it. What's up,
guys? All the words that you could use.
Yes, and right there is the admonishment to ladies. Be careful. You don't want to make a pesel masecha because messing up your word can cause idols to be formed. That's exactly what happened with pesel micha at the very end of Shoftim. This is where it came from. That's the first one. Number two. Arur makla aviv imo. Cursed is someone who curses his father and his mother is Yehuda. Father and mother is not a reference to your actual father and mother. It's a reference to Chokmah and Bina. Do you have any questions on that? David Montanik is right over there. We've been through Tanya together. He can answer all your questions. But Chokmah and Bina is the father and the mother, which stands for the highest levels that are out there in the world, and that Chokmah and Bina, if used properly, is good. But here's the problem with Yehuda. Yehuda is a strong guy who jumps to do what he feels is the Ratzon Hashem. Sometimes it works out well. Sometimes it doesn't work out so well. His thought process is just do it. Go ahead and do it. It doesn't matter. Sometimes that can be very, very good, but sometimes you'll jump to conclusions without thinking clearly, and when you do things without thinking beforehand, unfortunately that leads to wrong things. You're not using your Chokmah and your Bina correctly. And that's the admonishment to Yehuda. Use your Chokmah and Bina correctly, because if not, these are bad things. Example, Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped into the Yamsu. That's awesome. Yehuda approached Yosef in order to take back Binyamin. That's awesome. However, David HaMelech ran to go get Bathsheba. Even though he was correct, it looked like it was a chait, and because of that, he was punished. Use your Chokmah and Bina correctly to know how to do something. Not just what to do, but how to do something. That's the admonishment to Yehuda. Next thing. Over Masik Voreyu, you cannot take over the land of your friend, encroach in your friend's property. Now, that stands for Yisachar. Yisachar stands for Yesh Skar. He wants reward so badly. He's willing to go into his friend's property and do what his friend really needs to do for him. He's willing to do his friend's job instead of his friend doing it. He's willing to do it himself because he thinks, listen, I'll just do it now. I'll do it and I'll get the scar for it. He's willing to do it. Now, that can be considered geneva, depending on the situation. Sometimes that's great. Your friend wasn't going to do it, so you'll do it instead. That's awesome. But sometimes you're taking away the merit of your friend, and that's not good. That's why Yisachar can be a bad thing. It's yesh schar, but sometimes that's not the best thing in the world to do. That, unfortunately, is not the best thing. That's what we're applying for, Yisachar. Or Mashke Iver Bederach is putting the blind upon the road and putting a stumbling block in front of them, allowing the blind person to fall. That is Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik stands for aesthetics. His absolute beauty. Not too many people can be unaffected by the beauty of Yosef HaTzadik. When Yosef is around, people see him and think that that's the way to go. Now, Yosef HaTzadik, he was an unbelievably good-looking guy and was able to get out of any sin that he might have possibly done. But not everyone can do that. If you're that good-looking, and you put yourself in those positions, sometimes you might mess up. That's the problem with the aesthetics of Yosef, that it can be great for some people, but not. And that's Mashke Iver Bederach that confuses blind people on the road, where people think, well, if Yosef did it, then I can do it. I can walk by. I can do. I'll give an example. College campus kiruv. Because I'm sure I'm not going to sin if I'm on college campuses. And I'll tell you right now, good luck, dude. Because you have to be a very special person to be able to go on college campuses and try to get the guys I'm fine with. The girls are the issue. I have no idea how people do it. They are amazing people, and I hope they continue to be able to do it. But Mashke Iver Bederach is a massive issue with something like that. You have to know how to use it properly, otherwise it could be a massive kolosha. That's the concept by Yosef HaTzadik. The next one. Matam Mishpat Gir Yosef Almana. This is not explained at all. Changing around the judgment of orphans and widows is Binyamin. I have no idea why. No clue. He doesn't give an answer. This is from the Me'ashilach, the Ishbitzer. He doesn't say why. Perhaps you guys can come up with something. What happened with Binyamin? That it was Mate Mishpat Ger Yasom Ve'almana. Messing up the judgment of Gerim, Yesomim, and Almanos.
He was the only one who
You have to say something that he did or something that it has to do with them. Yeah. Pilegesh Begiva. It probably connects with it because that's the only... We know about Binyamin two major things. Never, well, about him, he never sinned. Then we have Pilegesh Begiva, right, where that whole massive mitzvah happened. And then we have Sholomon. Those are the three main things. Obviously Mordechai later on, but those are the three major things.
He knew that Yosef was Yosef, but he kept quiet the entire time until the end. And he didn't mess up the judgment that Yosef had to do anything.
So how do you apply that? What midah do you learn from Binyamin? To be quiet when it's time to be quiet and say something when you know you should say something?
Because somebody who messes up the judgment and somebody who talks to him, maybe that is it.
That's good. Binyamin didn't talk, meaning there are times where if you can speak up for their judgment, then do so. But if you don't, then you're messing them over. And that's what we learn from Binyamin. That's good. I like that. That's one there. Next one. Sleeping with the wife of your father. Who's that? Reuben. Now Reuben is the person in the Torah that it says he slept with his father's wife. It does say that about Reuben. Now Rashi tells us Chas v'shalom Reuben ever slept with Bilhah. That never happened. Instead, Reuben changed around the beds, thinking that Yosef wanted to be together with Bilhah. He took the bed out of Bilhah's room and put it in Leah, his mother's room, when Rachel had passed away, to show that his mother was the Iker and not Bilhah. That's how the Gemara says. That's how it says over here. So we have to understand something different. Reuben is a Bachor. A Bachor is more comparable to his father than any of the other children. A male son takes after his father in every way possible. I don't have an oldest Bachor. My oldest Bachor is a girl, right? But Ezi, if anybody knows Ezi, is exactly like me. In both looks and temperament, everything about him is like me. Okay, so in that way, the oldest son takes over. Reuben obviously was the Bachor. He's called the Bachor Yisrael three times in the Torah. It's called the absolute Bachor. Even though he didn't get the double portion of Yisrael, he is called the Bachor. The idea behind him is supposed to be that you can only take on the good midos of your father, but not the bad. The impetuousness of Reuben, the idea of, I'm just going to do this, I'm not going to ask any questions, was something that was wrong. Something that Yaakov himself worked on and was able to perfect. Reuben had not yet perfected him. He's called Pachas Kamayim. He went too quickly, and his impetuousness. That's really what it's wording as. That was what Reuben should not have done. You can take the good midos of your father, the good midos that you see behind, but not the bad. Next is Gad. Arur Shulchan and Kol Behemoth, sleeping with animals. Now, Gad never slept with any animals. So instead, it's got to be a remez to something. What's the remez? The remez is the following. Gad, according to the Me'ashilach, I don't know how he can say this, I have absolutely no idea, had the lowest nefesh out of all of them. His nefesh was the lowest level of any of the shvatim. I have no idea where that comes from. I'm assuming from the Zohar, because you don't make stuff like that up. Can you imagine going to Shemayim and God's like, what? You just say that about me? How could you have said that? But God had the lowest level, says the Me'ashilach. His shlemus could only be reached with help from others. Yehuda was an Aryeh. And God is known as the Kfir, the lion, the younger lion who needed help from the older lion to be able to do something. God's levels, you have to be mistapit the muat and be okay with the fact that you may not have the greatest job in the world. You're not going to be the Gadol Ador. You're not going to be the leader of the whole nation. You just have to accept where you are and what you're doing and do it well. That's what God has to do. But if you don't, then you're sleeping with animals. You're doing the wrong thing. You're destroying your neshama, and you're doing something completely different from what your goal was supposed to be. That's the concept. What's up?
Like,
it's a hard one. I'm telling you, it's a hard one.
It's almost like saying that you should settle for mediocrity. That's okay.
I hear that, and I was thinking it as I read it, and I was sitting there, and I was like, well, what in the world does that mean? I think it may be that if you shoot for the stars, and you only have the ability to do one thing, like if I just say to myself right now, I am going to be a professional baseball player at the age of 34. I just turned 34. Thank you for all you guys who brought me the present. That's an awesome present. But it is that. But if you shoot for the star, if I decide I'm going to be a professional baseball player right now, not everyone can be the natural. Not always does it happen. Does anybody get that reference? From 1970s, Roy Hobbs. Roy Hobbs. You all get that? Do you get it? Really? The Robert Redford movie from the 1970s, The Natural? It's about the greatest baseball player of all time. He struck out the Babe Ruth of the time, and his name was Roy Hobbs. You know what I'm talking about? Does anybody here know what I'm talking about? Yeah, he crushes the ball on the ball. You know what? The thing of the ball? The outfield. Oh my gosh! Although that does have a great lesson behind the movie, the lesson of you should still believe in God even though you believe in sports, and if you don't believe in God like that sportscaster, you will die. That's a great lesson to learn from a movie. Nonetheless, The Natural should be, I know, regardless, right? That was
the greatest trick of all time. It's not a sport unless you can die doing it.
Not agreed. Baseball and football are still a good sport. Anyway, regardless, and maybe, I don't know, nobody's dying. Well, anyway, way off subject. Regardless, I don't know for sure if gut is the answer regarding this, if that's the answer, but I think it means don't go for something which is impossible. I think that's what it means. Know what your limitations are and go with them, and go with it, even though you know you're limited in that way. Okay, so I can't give an Iyum Shir on the level of my Rebbeim in back in Yeshiva. So I can't do that, but I can give it on my level, so I'll give it on my level rather than on their level. If I shoot for their level, I'm going to give a shear that nobody understands, even I don't understand it. But if I shoot for a level that I can attain, that might be something. Maybe that's where we're learning from.
Yeah, knowing what your role is also, like in a basketball team, you have Michael Jordan, and then you've got everybody else who's on the floor with it.
Good. You're not knowing what your role is. Yeah, you know what your role is. That's good. That's the idea behind God, and I think that's what I was trying to get. That's what I really meant by that. Usher, the next one is Arur Shokhi v'Machoso, sleeping with one's sister. Again, Usher never slept with his sister. What's the pshat? Well, he did, actually. He married his sister. All the shvatim married their sister. So technically, he did marry his sister. But that's not the issue over here. He did. His daughters were the most beautiful one. Here's the pshat. Your love for a sister. I don't have a sister, so I'm assuming this is true. You guys tell me. But love for a sister is automatic. Okay? It's automatic. It's just a no. Okay? That's somewhat. You marry someone similar to your sister in one way. That's the line, that you're looking for someone similar to your sister. That I've definitely seen that before. And not only that, I mean, this is, it's not only a Gemara. This seems to be natural as well, that people are drawn to, we're not going to go into Freudian philosophy over here, but you're drawn to your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, depending on whatever it is. If I had a sister, she'd want somebody like me. I would assume that would be obvious. That would be obvious for everybody. That this is for Usher, whose avodah was to widen his boundaries. Usher was about not just sitting with what he had in his avodah, and this is the opposite of what we said by God. The avodah of Usher was to work harder and harder and not just stay put. To always work harder and harder and to keep going. Meaning not just be okay with, I'm going to settle for this and I have my love for my sister and I'm not going to grow. No, grow with that love. Go even further with that. Take it to the next level. That's Usher. Next. Sleeping with your mother-in-law. Shokhidim Kosanto. That's Zvulun. Okay? Don't fully get this either. Zvulun was known for his ships and his business. It's also a bit of impetuousness. He was very quick, Zvulun, very quick in those types of ways. In the way that you can understand, they call it Yira, that he was too into Mihirus, and the C also stands for Mihirus, that he was too quick in doing things, and that's the idea of Zvulun marrying a mother-in-law before the daughter is available, so to speak. Marrying the mother of the woman, because the daughter, you're not willing to wait for that girl to grow up and become a little bit older. That's the idea. It takes a little bit of work also, but we don't have that much time, so let's finish it off over here. Hitting one's friend in private is done. Dun was a person who was able to judge people. Dun lachat schus. Dun had the ability. And to hit somebody in private means that if you've done him the wrong way, you're killing him in private. Without him even realizing that anything happened, you're the one cursing him, using that voodoo doll, putting those little pins inside, and the guy has no idea why these bad things are happening. That a person cannot do. But again, to judge them favorably, that's the way to use dun correctly, and then not taking bribes. Aru lokeak shokad hakos nefesh damnaki. Taking bribes is naftali. Naftali is to not give someone something before he needs it in his avoda, so that his avoda is not affected by it. Again, Naftali was a ayala shluka, a quick hind. We know nothing about Naftali's land except the fact that he had the snails, the Muranek snails, or whatever it was for Tcheles, whatever they had for Tcheles, and then we know that Naftali was al bamase sadeh, and that he ran back to Mitzrayim to go get a get. I don't know how that really connects with Naftali, but it's there. And the last curse, not upholding the Torah, and that stands for Shimon, who unfortunately is always caught in one of the chatayim. The biggest one was Shitin, that he was always involved in doing something that went against the Torah itself. We're going to end off with one thing. Gam koholi v'chol makas shelo kasuv. There are 98 curses in Kisava. The Gemara tells us there are 100 minus 2. So everybody asks, why call it 100 minus 2? Just say 98. Why are you calling it Mea Chasar Shayin? So the Gemara says, because there are another two, but they're so bad, the Tocha couldn't mention them. Now the Tocha is pretty bad. Hemorrhoids is pretty bad. Right? Having like fevers that don't go away is pretty bad. There's a lot of bad things that are mentioned in the Tocha. What could be so bad that it's not even mentioned? So Rabbi Yonis and Aichitz says what it is. Rabbi Yonis and Aichitz does not quote a Medrash. He tells us, Gam ko holi v'ko maka shalo kasu v'sefer Torah zeh, all the sicknesses and illness and hits that you don't have written in the Torah is a reference, he says, to Misas Talmidei Chacham, the death of the greatest men of the generation. Now it's funny, says the Ksav Sofer, that's only one. It's not two. That counts as only one thing. So Gam ko holi v'ko maka is really one thing. Why is that considered two? Says the Ksav Sofer, a brilliant answer. Okay, a brilliant answer. There are two things that Talmid Chacham does for you. Number one, he davens for the nation while he's still alive. He's able to daven, and his schut is able to protect you. That means that spiritually, there's something strong that is there that he's able to do for you that you don't even realize until after he's gone. When somebody like that passes away, there is a spiritual protection that is now gone, that is no longer there. That's missing from the world. That's one thing that the tzaddik is, when the tzaddik passes away, that you lose. The second thing that you lose is something gashmi, which means you have no one to go to for your strong questions. You have an unbelievable question. There's no one to go to anymore. Sure, somebody else is going to take his place, but no one is like Rebbe Yashiv. No one is like Rebbe Moshe Feinstein. No one's like Rebbe Aaron Cutler. No one's like the Chazon Ish. No one's like the Chofetz Chaim or Chaim Ozer Grudetsky. No one's like the Aruch HaShulchan. You can go all the way back until the Gra. You're not going to find somebody like these people, and even in the next generation, you're never going to find them. Once they're gone, and nobody can take the position. Somebody has to step up, but nobody can fully take the position, as we spoke about 4 weeks ago, says the Ksav Sofer. That's the pshat, that you're losing two things. Gam ko holi v'chol makas, that number one, you lose all spiritual protection. Number two, you lose gashmi, you lose your ability to understand things in the world that you could have understood. But then the kasha is, at the very end of the pasuk, it says, ad hisham da, until you're destroyed. What does that mean? If the tzaddikim are gone, that actually gives a kapara to the nation. The answer is, Adisham Dach is, tzaddikim are taken away from the world before a massive destruction happens. Sometimes their death is mechaper and the destruction doesn't happen. Sometimes it's not and the destruction happens anyway. And this is what it means. Ad means before Hisham Dach, you are destroyed. So you know it's bad, because the Mises Tzaddikim will take away the spiritual and the physical protection. Maybe it's a kapara, maybe it isn't. And at the end of the day, there can be destruction, ultimate destruction. You have to worry. Every time a gadol passes away, what's going to happen afterwards? Sometimes, nothing happens. And sometimes, the worst things in the world happen. Chofetz Chaim passes away, Hitler Yimach Shmo comes into power. That's not a coincidence. That's exactly how the world runs. I don't want to mention the other ones. Some of them are out there. But each one of them has something to do with something. And Baruch Hashem, we haven't had anything happen since Rabbi Yasha passed away. That's Reb Nosson Tzvi. And then since Rebbetzin Knievsky passed away. Has anything happened in the last 3 years that has been terribly noticeable, you know, with us? Thank God. That's another call also. When you know that they die at a certain old age where they mamish lived until the point where they literally lived out everything they were supposed to live, maybe that's pshat. If they live that way, then Baruch Hashem, everything's all good. And if they don't, maybe it's not. Maybe that's the problem, that if they get taken away before their time, that's when you lose everything. So we'll stop with that, guys. Have a great